If ever there was a state agency that encompasses all that we love and know about Montana, it's the Montana FWP, Fish, Wildlife, and Parks. Hank Worsak is the director of this agency, and he joined us for this edition of Voices of Montana to talk about their engagement with the public, the wolves and bear management, game populations, hunting regulations. Saved a little time, not enough really, for state parks too. I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana. Thanks for clicking on the podcast. Hank Worsak has been serving this agency for 17 years, and I think you'll enjoy this one. Feel free to contact me at tom@voicesofmontana.com, and also thanks for subscribing. I can't imagine this agency, and who doesn't love all of these things that we love about Montana are kind of wrapped up in our Montana FWP, our Fish, Wildlife, and Parks. We have a guy heading that department who's been there for 17 years and a lot of years as a public servant as well. And on top of that, he's a Marine. So let's welcome our special guest, Hank Worsak, today, director of the FWP. Hank, how you doing?
Real good, sir, and really appreciate this opportunity, so looking forward to it.
Well, thank you for being here. I can't imagine, like I said, managing all of that. You've been in that department for 17 years. Now you're heading it. Is it what you imagined?
You know, it actually is. And yeah. I was retired, and I loved the agency and had an opportunity to come back, and I was asked by quite a few people to put in for the job, and I thought they were just being kind. So, but I ended up doing it, and I will tell you, I love every day of it. I mean, I know that any given day I'm upsetting about 50% of the people, and that changes from topic to day. And but I enjoy the passion that everybody has for it. That's what I love about the job and what we do. And it just really is a neat experience, and we've got some of the most highly educated, dedicated employees in the nation working for us.
So yeah, yeah,
it's a great place to be.
700 of them too. That's an awful lot. It's a big budget.
774.
Oh, that's what it is now. Okay. Yeah. Holy cow. And all of them, and like you say, that's on top of all the people who want to talk to you about their specific issues. So one day you're talking to a snowmobiler. The next day you're talking to an antelope hunter. The next day you're talking to, you know, a bighorn sheep hunter. It's an awful lot to keep track of. How do you do it?
Well, I've got really good staff to help.
Right.
So, and the thing is that I do have an open door policy. I like to talk about people. I mean, we went around the state this year. We did, went to all seven regions. We did in the evenings, we met open to the public open door meeting to talk about anything we wanted to. And then during the day we talked to staff and went, drove on to the next one and the next one. And we put, I believe, about 4,200 miles just within the state. In two or almost 3 weeks of driving around.
That's the only way to do it.
It is.
Yeah.
It was impressive. So
the and getting that relationship too with people really helps, and I think that people appreciate that. We almost expect that in Montana, Hank. You know, we expect access to our senators, where in other states, you know, you feel like you're lucky to have a few minutes with a senator. In Montana, you're just a regular guy, gal. And that helps. I think that helps. What would you say? Does that help do the job?
Well, I think it does. I think it's imperative that you have to do that. You have to go out and meet and talk to people. And like I said, I have an open door. If somebody's got a question, call me, and I'll answer it. And the best I can. If I can't answer, I'll find the answer for you. But it is to me. It's a lot of fun. It's challenging. It's a full time job. I mean, I told my wife it was going to be difficult coming back to work, and I'm on the phone a lot.
I know it.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, no, I know the number of hours it takes to do that sort of job. This kind of conversation starts with a couple of comments that I got during an open phone session from some listeners. And I want to sort of just sum that up for you. One caller was addressing the expanding hunting season in the Elkhart Mountains. I think the main concern there is that one concern was too that public. You felt public comment maybe opposed to some of the new regulations, but also felt that the elk populations there didn't merit increased hunting days. And then he gave out some figures here: as it takes 30 calves to get one bull to 10 years old. That area he called kind of a specialized trophy bull area. So he had some concerns about how to maintain the good trophy bulls with with maybe increased hunting. So talk about that process. Talk about if there's something specific in there, but mainly talk about the process that your scientists go through and your field researchers and the public aspect of this in determining how you sustain, because that's one of the big jobs for the FWP is sustainability for our hunting traditions.
That's a really good question, Tom. I really appreciate it. So I'll kind of go back. I'll go a little bit to what I think we need to follow, and what I'm really trying to emphasize with the department and everybody else I deal with is the public trust doctrine. And what that is basically defines the roles of the public, the trustees, and the trust managers. And the public is obviously the public. We have the trustees are the voted officials, or in this case, the commission, who is assigned by the governor or the legislator. And they're the ones that make the decisions. And then we have the trust managers. That's the department. And we provide the information for them to make the best informed decisions. And then we follow those decisions and implement them. So it's a pretty neat process if we follow that. And the power really is in the people if they participate in this. And that's where we're at right now is in the public comment period. So I do a little bit different approach this year. And what I did is I asked the wildlife manager and biologist to be aggressive and look at two things. One is I worked for the department for many years and always heard about simplification of regulations. They're too complex. I need to have a lawyer on speed dial and understand what I'm doing, things like that. So I said, I want to look at it from simplification and also look at it from what does the science say? What does the biology say? And how liberal or can we go? What do we need to do? And then bring the social part into it. And bring those together as a proposal that's then go in front of the commission and they'll put an official proposal out where we're at right now. And then the public comment starts again to get that lined out. So it's a multifaceted process and it's a big process and it's a bigger bite at the apple than I think we've ever done before as a department. And we've got a lot of people talking, and that's what I wanted to have done is a lot of people talking, trying to figure out what's going on, and you have the ability to control what's best for the state, the people do. Hopefully that makes some sense.
No, it does. And I'll be talking about these public comment periods now upcoming for the 2022-2023 hunting season. I want to get to a question that I always struggle with. If I was a person in your position, and we see it an awful lot in today's world, especially because now public comment periods you're taking comments from people who may not be stakeholders. They may have an interest in what you're doing, but they may not be stakeholders on the ground. An analogy is you've got an environmental organization. I'm not trying to malign them or anything, but they send out messages saying, there's this big decision upcoming. Please forward your comments. And so you get comments from New Jersey and you get comments from Pennsylvania and they're what they are told to say. And I know that happens an awful lot. They're sort of people, they're almost robots, the whole Twitter bot thing. Right. How do you weigh those different opinions?
Well, that's a really good question. That came up when I was down in Bozeman and we were talking to people and they talked about the wolf issue, that we're not listening to the public. And once again, that's exactly what happened. We had thousands and thousands of comments come in from people that were not from Montana, and their comments were, don't trap wolves or hunt wolves. Well, that isn't the topic that's in front of the commission. That law has been already, there's a law already saying that we're going to do this. So it's really not helpful just to say don't do that. So you have to put yourself in the place of a commissioner or a decision maker. What do you look at to help you make that decision? And that's what they need to look at. So it's a weighted process of as they look through the comments and try to figure it out. So that's like I said, once again, that's a really good question. You have to figure out what it is. And then when you look at, like for our season setting, the public is the people that use the season, the follow the regulations. So they have a lot to say. That's what they listen to and what they've got to say to try to tailor to them. Now, it's not a popularity contest.
Right.
And sometimes people think because if I put 10,000 comments in, it's going to weigh that way.
Yeah.
Well, it isn't. It depends on what makes the most sense for the person making that decision. And once again, for the legislature, you voted that person in, it's kind of do what you think is right. So it's just an extension of that whole process, the legislative process.
Common sense approach. I appreciate that. Coming from a Marine Corps veteran, Hank Warsetch is with us, Montana's department director for the FWP, public servant for nearly 30 years, as I mentioned, and known for fostering landowner and sportsman relations. I want to get into that because that's key, obviously, in doing all this. And I'm not sure I got enough time before the 9:20 break to get this next listener comment in. It's sort of, again, on the same line. He talked specifically about the Custer Tag in District 900, for example. But I think if to sum it up, let's see, you have increased either sex permits by 50%, and no one is going to use that increase 50% to shoot cows. So again, it's the it's what the actions that you guys take that don't necessarily, in some people's opinion, line up with what they're seeing on the ground. Can you address that one about how again you determine how many licenses and what kind of licenses are going to apply to a particular district?
Okay, that once again another good question. I appreciate that. So basically, in that area, once again, I had the biologist look at this and say, okay, what can the species sustain that we're not going to do any harm to it, and we can be as liberal as possible. Well, we've got areas, and there was eight areas that we had that were, 200 to 800% over objective, a ton of elk in there, and we have a limited quota. So the question is, why do we even have a limited quota if we've got too many elk in the area? Well, it comes down to access. That's what the issue comes down to, and a lot of them are on private land and not the access on public land. So how do we move them? So we put a proposal out, and we knew it wasn't probably going to go anywhere, but we threw it out there to open it up on private land with a general license to push them off of that and increase the number on public land to help that harvest on the bulls on that. Now understand that doesn't go to the management of it, but it gets elk moving. And a lot of those areas, the permits weren't they were for either sex permits, but they were generally open for cow hunting. So they had a general license for cows. So the idea was to get the elk moving off of private land onto public land and get some harvest done. And that's we're trying to break that code on how to do that. And we're going to continue pushing that is how do we get access to private land without using force, but using some type of incentive to get elk moving.
Well, and part of the beauty of that, and thank you for that, part of the beauty of that is that your hunting regulations can change from year to year. So I think you make decisions with that knowledge. We'll come on back and talk about some of those new hunting regulations upcoming here in just a bit.
Protect your horse from the cold weather conditions of the wind and snow with a horse blanket from Western Ranch Supply. We have a large selection of winter tack and quality blankets from Classic Equine, Weatherbeater, Horsewear, and more. Our horse blankets come in multiple sizes and are insulated and lined to keep your performance horse warm or to provide luxury to an old 4-H horse. Visit one of our locations in Billings or Great Falls or order online at WesternRanchSupply.com. Serving the big country, Western Ranch Supply.
I'll get to one of my favorite topics here in a little while because I'm always banging the drum about grizzly bear management. They're fully recovered in the Yellowstone ecosystem. The other ones prove they're probably completely and fully recovered. In fact, they're expanding their range on the Northern Continental Divide ecosystem. There's more and more issues that are coming up because of grizzly bears. They're becoming habituated to humans to the point that if they are out in the wild and they hear a gunshot, they come running to the gunshot instead of running the other way, like a lot of like game ought to be. Okay, back here with Hank Warsek, director of the Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks. Tom Schultz here from the Northern News Network. It's Voices of Montana. Again, thank you for being here, Hank. I appreciate you coming on. Let's hit the hunting regulations for next year and the year after. And there's a public comment period that's been expanded. You have a ton of regions. There's still a ton of meetings that people can take part in. Go to the website, folks. It's easy enough to find. You'll have to do a search, but it's fwp.mt.gov to find out when those opportunities are. But Hank, what's changed in those hunting regulations?
Well, there's a lot that changed in hunting regulations. So one of the things that we looked at, and one of the main things we're looking at statewide that we heard from going around the state is that people are looking that if you draw a permit for an area for elk, whatever the case may be, that's the only place you can hunt for that permit. somewhat like we do for the deer, mule deer tags. And the idea that I heard from the public is they think it would restrict people to make a conscious decision where they're going to hunt and get rid of some of the crowding. And it may increase the odds of applying if you have less people applying for that. So that's one of the things that we asked the commission to look at for a statewide change to do that. And, you know, once again, we don't know what's going to happen, but we know status quo. You know, the old adage is if you do the same thing over and over again, expect something different. That's a definition of insanity. And we need to change what we're doing and try something different and understand we have a 2-year window to try these things in. But the public needs to really go out and come up with these meetings, participate with the CAC meetings. There'll be Zoom. There'll be different ways of doing that. And listen and then make your comments. Put your comments in because we've got a commission that wants to hear the comments. They don't want to rubber stamp things. They want to look at it, figure out the best way to move forward and do the best for the state. So to me, it's a golden opportunity right now.
Do you change your hunting regulations kind of on a regular basis? Is it that you use that process to manipulate to try to get outcomes 5-10 years down the road?
You do. You set your quota and stuff. You manage the species. That's our goal as the trust managers, and try to figure out the best way to do things. And we do that through the regulations and what the people look at and what the people want. You know, there's a case in point is there was a request this year to extend the pheasant bird season through the end of January to look at doing that. Well, I don't know how that's going to go, but we're hearing a lot of people in opposition to it. But at least it's a comment out there, and then we've got some, you know, what does the public want to do? And from the resource standpoint, it doesn't hurt the resource, but it's a social issue. And that's what happens is a lot of these are, most of them are social issues, and that's where the commission and the legislature make those decisions on the social issues.
How are our game populations right now? I mean, go ahead.
They're good, you know, and it, you know, as everybody's aware of this last season, it was hard to hunt because the weather hadn't come in and different things have changed. But numbers are good. It depends on the area where you're at. And that's why it's imperative that, you know, you help the biologist in the season setting. And if they're putting things out, you can either agree or disagree with them and tell them what you've seen. So this is a good opportunity. And like I said, elk is really growing. You know, we've brought them back from the brink and done a really good job on that. Actually, too good a job sometimes, depending on where you're at. And then how do we manage them? And the other issue is I don't have the luxury of managing elk where we want them to be. We have to manage them where they're at. And right now, a lot of them are on public land. So how do we do that? How do we get to that access to them? And that's going to be the hardest thing to get across and move them elk around. So
I'm going to take a quick news break and we'll come on back. I want to talk more about public land and private land pressures, how you have worked with landowners and sportsmen over the years, and maybe if there's work that people can pat themselves on the back for, or if there's more work to be done in that area, and many more questions to come as well. Going to look at chronic wasting disease. I think that's fair. And I don't want to forget state parks, too, because it's fish, wildlife, and parks, and we do love our state parks around here. So we'll get some comments upcoming, and I'll open up those phone lines here in a bit, too, at 866-627-5483. You can always text us at 781-627-5483 with Hank Worsak, director of the Montana FWP.
You know, it's hard to remember last year's gifts, but the things we do remember are more important. Things like family dinner. So this year, why don't you give your family something they'll remember? Something they'll ask for every year. Or maybe even every night. Beef. It's what's for dinner.
Brought to you by Montana Beef Producers and Checkoff Dollars.
Welcome back. It's From Montana for Montana, Voices of Montana. Hank Worsak, director of the Montana FWP, is with us today. Still lots to talk about. Going to go to the phones here in just a bit. We talked about those public comment hearings and meetings. Lots of opportunities for all of the seven regions in Montana. I look right now at the list. I'm looking at them. Still January 3rd and 4th, you've got Glendive and Miles City. For Region 6, January 4th and 5th, it's Havre. There's a Zoom meeting there. They're going to be in Plentywood. They're going to be in Glasgow. They're going to be in Malta. Those meetings, there's one today, as a matter of fact, in Stanford. at the City Hall at 7 o'clock tonight. So I would recommend to, you know, take part in this and go to the FWP homepage and find out where those meetings are, and you'll get them listed there. Hank, thank you again for being here. I tell you what, Chris is going to go on to a topic that I want to talk about here, Wolves and Grizzlies, and he's listening from Columbia Falls, so we'll go to the phones here, and it's on KOFI's 1180 AM and 104.3 FM. Chris, you're on the air with Director Worsak.
Yeah, thanks, Hank. You know, it seems to me that we're not we need a media blitz to educate private owners to, you know, that we're not an enemy out here, you know, and really we're the sportsmen. We're the sportsmen who pay the bills through the Pittman, Robinson, Wallop Robe, you know, fishing and wild game. And that's been an excellent thing to protect the sportsmen in this country and in Montana as well. But some facts here, the reason why I want to see the Wolves and the Bears, now they've gone way past the limit now. They're really a danger to people, especially sportsmen out there. Tom, you mentioned earlier about the dinner bell. That's what they were calling it, the dinner bell thing that the Bears seem to have a sense. Why do they have a sense? Because they can smell. They can smell great. You know, a grizzly bear has a sense of smell 7 times greater than a bloodhound. He has 100 times that of a human being. And grizzly bears also possess a thing in their mouth, right? It's called the Jacobson organ on the root of their mouth, and they can detect heavy moisture or borne odors. So they've tracked these bears, and I know they're tracking the wolves as well. But there's just too many now. More than they promised. They said they were going to put out there. Now they're a burden, you know, on wild game. Elk in certain areas have declined because of the impact that they have. So why don't we look at these facts and say, well, why do you want public opinion? Public opinion doesn't even involve themselves in this. They may belong to an extreme environmental group who continuously throw a wrench in the works, you know. And the sportsmen really support the years of what the fishing game stood for, you know. And we're the real sportsmen out here, which I think we're given a bad rap here because we listen to the public, and sometimes they're too soft on these issues that they just don't seem to understand.
Chris, a lot of good things there to go off of. I appreciate that. We're going to run out of time in this break. We're at 866-627-5483 or 781-627-5483. You can take a crack at a bunch of that stuff there, Hank, public comments. But go wherever you want to go in response to Chris's question.
Okay, so how much time do I have real quick?
Minute and a half now, about 1 minute and 10 seconds.
Okay, so real quick on the, once again, I'll just reiterate, public comment is very important. When they do the CAC, there is now 7 commissioners, so there will be a commissioner in each CAC meeting to hear what you've got to say as well. And then I'd like to, when we come back from the break, I'll talk about the Wolves and Grizzly Bears. How does that sound?
That sounds good. And I'll kind of set that up a little bit too, because I have concerns that they continue to move the goalpost on us. And so originally, especially it happened, you know, with Wolves, it took a little while, but eventually the sportsmen groups and the landowners got on board with it. We weren't afraid of having wolves on the landscape. We just wanted to have consistent management tools to, you know, so we know what to expect. That's not happening with the Grizzlies. There's a lot of politics in this. There's still a major court decision that has to wrestle itself through. And what we are finally, what we're seeing an awful lot of, and I'm talking up to the breaker, by the way, Hank, is that they're moving the goalposts on us. And I worry that, okay, I'm not going to buy in anymore. If I can't get the ball across the end zone here, what's the point of being in the game? So we'll come on back and talk about that. Hank Worsak is with us, director of the Montana FWP. It's from Montana, for Montana, Voices of Montana.
Voices of Montana continues right after this.
A boot built to feel like weightless comfort. Zero Gravity Boots at Boot Barn. Designed with rodeo athletes in mind, Zero Gravity Boots utilize advanced footwear technology for all-day comfort. Each pair features the lightweight zero-gravity insole made with a memory foam cushion for comfort, shock absorption for energy return, and airflow with temperature control to keep you cool. A new force of comfort. Cody James Zero Gravity Boots, only at Boot Barn.
Let's launch right back into this. And by the way, we do have time here for some open phones at 866-627-5483 or 781-627-5483 if you want to text a message here. Let's get back to where we left off, the moving goalposts. And I'm going to set it up here just a little bit more because I know that our environmental industry, they like, and I don't want to, you know, there's a lot of legitimate and genuine concern there, okay? But it might be me, it might be misappropriated as an industry group because they like to have these species remain endangered so they can raise the fundraising banner. You know, I get all that. That's the politics of it. But for the folks who are on the ground and seeing grizzly bears moving farther and farther east and then more and more human conflict, boy, that's got to be one thing that you guys talk about a ton. And it seems like the feds are not really cooperating in the move to get state management of our grizzly bears.
Yeah, I really appreciate that question. That's one of the things I talked about with the governor when I accepted the position, is we talked about grizzly bears on the front. And I don't know if the listeners are aware or not, but there is a petition that's been filed by the governor to look at delisting grizzly bears in the Northern Continental Divide. And we've also Yellowstone is also putting one in, and we're taking a run at it. And it's interesting. One of the things that I heard when I started was that this connectivity was a big issue for the feds, that, you know, bears would move from one area to another one to have make sure they have a solid interaction, you know, with the species. And I asked a simple question, can that be accomplished by a truck and trailer? And it surprised them. And I actually got it on record by saying, yeah, that would meet that requirement. So if we capture a bear up here that's, you know, that's a good bear, not a problem with, you know, livestock or anything else, and we can genetically, we can move it to Yellowstone, we're going to do that. So we can get these moving back and forth, and that will meet that one of the criteria we had to have for delisting, is we have this connectivity. So we are trying to think outside the box on that and working towards that goal because, as they indicated, you know, the bears are moving. They're changing what they used to do in the wild because now they're responding to gunshots, gut piles, all these other things. I mean, I talked to outfitters a long time ago that would bugle bears in when they're archery hunting. So it's a danger out there. And that's one of the things the governor asked me to look into and try to work on. So I think we've made some pretty good headway on that and we'll continue to do that.
I appreciate that. I'm going to just follow up with a question here because that's state management. Right now, it's under federal management, and the Endangered Species Act, there's not going to be any will in Congress to change that. Are there tools out there that the states can be more empowered with? Is there something that can be done on that level to – I know you want to move the ball over the goalpost, but at least moving the ball forward when it comes to better management of the bears?
Well, that's what we're trying to do is get the management of the bear. That's what we need to have. Mm-hmm. Like we do with the wolves. They're a species in need of management. And that's what we need to look at for the grizzly bears. But until we can get that, the other thing we looked at was the better definition of the 4D rule, which means how under what circumstances can you protect yourself to shoot a grizzly bear? And, you know, everybody's worried about this point of do I go to jail if I kill a grizzly bear if it's doing this? And, with the feds coming in and looking at this. So we were trying to get some definition, further definition to say under these circumstances is okay. And, better definition of sideboards without opening the act up. And we're still working on that as well. Just to get some relief for somebody going out to, you know, feed cattle and there's a bear in between them, you know, and they're doing things. What is their response? What do they feel comfortable with acting on?
Hank Warsek with us, director of the Montana FWP. We're going back to the phones, back up to the Flathead on 1180 KOFI, also 104.3 FM. Richard, you're on the air here on Voices of Montana with Director Warsek. Thanks for your call.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a couple comments on the wolf situation. I retired from Park Service and spent 10 years working in Yellowstone, and I was there in 95 when they put the wolves in. In fact, I was working at the Buffalo Ranch putting a water system in when they put the Rose Creek pack in. And as I recall, initially what the description of the reintroduction of wolves was, and this is, I think, exactly what it was in words. It was experimental and non-essential, which leads me to believe that it didn't actually start under the Endangered Species Act. So that has been lost through the years. I've never heard that mentioned again by any wildlife or anything else. So I wonder if you could touch on that a little bit. It was originally put in as experimental, non-essential.
Thanks, Richard, for your call. Appreciate that. Hank, you got some info on that?
I really don't, and I appreciate that because I've never heard that before. So I will definitely run that down. That is really something interesting to me. And I will definitely run that down next week and find out where that came from with the reintroduction, because I wasn't involved with that at that time. But that could be a game changer to me.
Well,
if that's what the idea was, and we've deviated from that drastically.
And that's the issue, is that we do, we allow these deviations. And again, if we're not able to get any wins here, and you look at the number of species that are listed as endangered or protected, and the number that have actually been recovered, that percentage is not good. So, let's go to Casey in Great Falls, KQDI, 1450 AM. Thank you, Casey. You're on the air with Director Warsick here on Voices of Montana.
Yeah, I wanted to give a comment and stimulate the discussion on one particular area dealing with the animal rights activists and the power that they have. There's two points that I wanted to make. Number one, I view them as somewhat of a religion. As we become more secularized or divorced from our Christian worldview in many respects, there's a filling of that gap with a kind of a nature religion. And when you're dealing with science, true science, not pseudoscience, but actual data, actual peer reviewed, you can see where these critters have to be managed, or they're going to take over whole swaths of your territory and revert it back to kind of a primitivism. And that's what the nature worshipers who live in these big cities desire. And so that's what you're confronting. It's not just you're dealing with science, they're dealing with pseudoscience. The same thing in other areas of our society. But the thing I wanted to focus on too, or bring up, is there's a lot of foreign money, foreign influence from Europe and other places, especially Europe. They kind of treat us, and doing with the Prairie Reserve up in Phillips County and other places. They just bought another big ranch down by in Fergus County. They're seeking to revert back to that, and that's their goal, to a kind of a native pre-white man, pre-European utopian vision. And that's what you're confronting. So it's like an endless, it's just a subjective, endless battle. Until you get undertake an attack on the very premise and foundation under which they're operating, which is kind of a religious subjectivism, you're not going to get in front of it. That's my opinion. So,
okay, Casey, I appreciate that. I'm trying to turn that into the form of a question here for you to address, Hank. And again, you can talk about the landowner and the sportsman relationship, but there's another entity on this landscape, and as we had kind of hit a little bit earlier, they like the conflict because it helps them, raise funds in their industry. How do you manage, the dynamic now that it's become real, real political?
That really is another good question. And, I call it rattling sabers. I mean, what they're doing is exactly what you're talking about. It doesn't matter what the group is. When they're trying to get an adversary to get membership or to have a cause, that's just, to me, it's just rattling sabers. There's a lot of that going on both sides. But it goes back to the point I made earlier on, is the commissioners, have a job to do, and the legislature has a job to do, to manage the species. And that's what our role is for the department, is to give the information on this. So I understand there's a lot of groups that want it to go back the way it was. Well, there's a balance on how far we can go. And that's why it's important that we have the public tell us what we need to do.
I like that.
And the other part of it is, and as with the modern days now with internet and everything else, and you can get 6,000 people together and put the same comment in saying nothing. So, you know, we hope, and I know we have really good commissioners that are going to wade through that and see it for what it is.
Yeah, and I believe they do. I believe, you know, if they're they're raised with that kind of common sense. I'm going to take a quick break, and we'll come on back. There's a couple of things I want to hit as well, but I like that, you know, it's a balance to how far we can go in that regard. I still want to talk about state parks because I love them.
So do I.
Yeah, I know. It is part of the job, too. Hank Worsak is with us, director of the Montana FWP, and we'll come on back with more. I got one text message. Might even have time for a quick comment if you want to call 866-627-5483. It is from Montana for Montana, Voices of Montana.
Looking to fly out of Great Falls for warmer pastures? Reduce your travel stress and stay at the newest hotel in Great Falls, Sleep In and Suites. Ask for the park and fly package and we'll drop you off at the airport and pick you up. If you're visiting Great Falls, Sleep In and Suites will give you great rates, a hot breakfast, pool, hot tub, and easy 10th Avenue access. Call 406-761-4600 and press 2 for reception. That's Great Falls' newest hotel, the Sleep In and Suites.
Hard for me to say it's the best of, because, you know, I always think we can do better. But tomorrow's program, because we're taking the day off for the New Year's, is Native Hoops, the Rise of American Indian Basketball. We spoke with author Wade Davies, who's now at the University of Montana, spent 20 years researching that topic. Pretty cool program. So that's what's on deck for tomorrow. Hank Worsak, today, director of Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, as I mentioned, you know, 774 employees and just all those concerns that we have and the things that we love, a lot of that wrapped up in that agency. Hank, appreciate your time. A couple of things I want to get to. One of them is because we've seen some cases, the bovine tuberculosis investigation up in Blaine County. Don't know if there's any further progress on that. You look at brucellosis, that can spread from livestock to wildlife. You look at the sheep as well, domestic versus bighorn, diseases can spread there. How do you manage wildlife while addressing some of those ag community concerns?
Well, the main thing we do is we work hand-in-hand with livestock on this stuff and the ag community to find out where we have issues. So with you know, the TB out there, we have worked with them to help capture animals, to check them and do different things with that. And then the same always with the brucellosis down in the Park County, down in those areas, Paradise. And, you know, it's funny. We even have extended seasons down there to help keep the elk away from the cattle. That's, and it's not really a reason to help harvest, but it helps them separate it out. So it was interesting when I talked to the biologists to find out that we go to that extent to try to help with the disease spreading. So it's there's multifaceted ways that we work with them and continue to work with our partners in the ag community because, you know, they do a lot of good for our lives, for our wildlife. I mean, they are the stewards of the land and wildlife live on it, so we need to work together to come up with some of these solutions.
Yeah,
so.
The original stewards of the land. Let's see, we got a minute and a half, maybe a little longer. State parks, Hank Worsak.
Okay, state parks near and dear to my heart. So if you know that we have changed a little bit, I reorganized that. It's state parks and recreation. I've got a new person in charge of that. She's doing a great job. We've seen an increase in recreation in the state, not just for the hook and bullet crowd, but every, you know, other people coming through. And how do we deal with the impacts on that? And that's part of the reason why I've put this together under Parks and Recreation and move some of the access issues under parks, the maintenance under parks. So before I had maintenance crew for parks, for fisheries, and for wildlife, and now we're blending them together and trying to get best bang for our buck and with people working together. So another example is for our you know, your toilets at a fishing access site.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 3/4 of them are filled by people that don't pay a dime. And we've looked at the different ways of a pay-to-play type thing and just help cover the cost of getting that done and not put it all on the back of the sport, the hunting and fishing public. So just ideas we're looking at for that and trying to expand that. But I'm really excited about moving forward with the parks. And once again, we're not a separate unit. We are Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, and we are under one brand. And we're trying to get, I want to bring everybody back together again and focus on the things that I love about the state. and get that taken care of.
I think that in the future, I'm going to be doing a series on various just state parks because they are very cool. I think the FWP has been looking at that backlog of maintenance and try to address that. We're down to 30 seconds. Final thoughts, Hank.
Yeah, what I'd say is I'd like to, one of the things I am putting together, too, is a group of 17 people. I've got the Private Lands Public Wildlife focusing on access issues and the 454s that have gone through with like the Wilkes Brothers and different things like that. And also getting groups together of different sportsmen, landowners, and ag community to come up with solutions on incentivizing access so we can get some animals harvested and moved off the private land. And work together rather than trying to use a hammer to get it done. Look at the incentives.
Thanks for the
working together.
Thanks for the work you do, Hank. We'll talk to you later.